Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent is here in studio and Keith Wood with us also. Evening, Keith. Season's greetings. I think we're at the time of year we can start saying that to each other.
No, it's still too early, for God's sake. Let's delay it and get all excited at the end. Definitely. What day is next Tuesday? I don't even know what date it is today. What?
Next Monday will be the 23rd.
Okay, so next Tuesday, next Monday, that's perfect time for saying season's greetings. Okay. And I'm not being a bah humbug. I'm just, let's not get too excited, Joe.
Rory O'Connor, happy Christmas to you, Rory.
Happy Christmas, Joe.
Happy Christmas, Keith.
Andy Farrell's doing his first press conference on
Happy Christmas, Dad.
Andy Farrell's doing his first press conference on December 23rd, so I think that's what I'll be signing off for. You know, we'll still be in rugby mode until then.
Well, let's start with that before we look back on the weekend that was. So Andy Farrell has named his first squad as such. It's a 45-player mini-camp in Abbottstown, interestingly. Is Abbottstown going to become more of a thing?
Yeah, all their Six Nations training will be in Abbottstown next year. So even the fact that they've announced it is a break from what we've known to be the norm for the last 4 or 5 years. And we wouldn't normally find out who was at training camps until a couple of days or weeks afterwards, and you'd be kind of ringing around the provinces trying to get careers. Is such and such training, or is he off at Ireland, and they're not allowed to tell you, and it was kind of a bit messy for the last while, but there's nice clarity to this. It's nice to know who Andy Farrell is thinking about it. I think we can take it, even though, what's the word they use on it? It's
a stock take.
It's not a training camp, it's a stock take. But it's nice to know who's there. It's basically an extended pre-Six Nations squad, I think. Okay. I think it's 8 of the World Cup, 33 are not there, which is interesting. And yeah, as I say, it's good to know, and there's a couple of interesting ones in there.
Sure. Rob Kearney, the headline news, I suppose. So no Rob Kearney in this 45-player mini-camp in Abbottstown, December 22nd and 23rd. And as you said, Andy Farrell's very first press conference will be on the 23rd of December. Some names in include Caelan Blade, Will Connors is in, Max Deegan, Caelan Dorris, Jameson Gibson-Park is in. Ronan Kelleher is in as well. I presume his injury will have cleared up by then. Billy Burns, Tom O'Toole also called into the squad. Along with Rob Kearney excluded, Sean Cronin, his neck injury continues. Jordy Murphy's an interesting one. I'll get your thoughts on that in a second. No Jack Carthy either. I know his form hasn't been good of late, but that's a bit of a drop for a fella who was starting World Cup matches. Kieran Marmion also out. John Ryan as well. And we should say, Devon Toner back in. That was an unfortunate 7 weeks to be outside the tent.
I mean, he missed the World Cup, but his reputation grew as tall as his height over the course of time. Tadhg Beirne, I think, is out, but he picked up a major injury on Saturday. They haven't confirmed that yet, but it didn't look nice at all. John Ryan also picked up what Johan van Graan described as a serious injury. Mm. And Jack McGrath, I think, would have maybe been pushing until he picked up his injury a couple of weeks ago. And Eric O'Sullivan is maybe a little bit unfortunate because he's been very good in the loose head side for Ulster in the European Cup in Jack McGrath's absence.
And is Jordy Murphy injured or carrying an injury?
No, he's playing, starting for Ulster. He's been quite good as well. I was surprised to see him gone, and I was surprised to see Will Connors in, even though Will Connors has been man of the match in almost every game he's played for Leinster. He can't get into the Champions Cup squad, which you'd imagine it's almost a minimum standard for getting into the Ireland squad, but obviously Andy Farrell likes what he sees. He's an excellent tackler. He's really good technique. He's great industry about him, but unfortunately, he's got one of Europe's, you could probably count most of the Leinster team as Europe's foreign players, but he's got Josh van der Fleer ahead of him, and Josh van der Fleer has been outstanding. So I think Dorris is a big one. I think we're going to see Caelan Dorris in the Ireland setup for a long time.
Ross Byrne in, Joey Carberry in. What catches the eye for you, Keith?
What catches the eye are a couple of the guys we've been talking about, Max Deegan, Will Connors, Caelan Dorris. It seems that seven and eight have become a young man's jersey, you know. And when you're looking at some of the young guys that have been playing over in England in the last year, it just seems to be it has fairly high attrition rate, which we've seen here as well. But these guys are, I mean, for me, they keep getting injured. So you nearly need as many of them on as you can, you know. I know that Caelan Dorris, everybody talks about him. I thought Max Deegan, every time I've seen him over the last 18 months, he has shown something that's a little bit different. He's very athletic, but in almost a slight way. And he offers something different. I think that's pretty interesting. We're getting a lot of injuries again. These games that we've had for the last few weeks have been pretty tough on a lot of the squads, actually. And the only ones that seem to have the full strength and depth to be able to deal with it are Leinster. Mm.
Not that we're here to retire Rob Kearney or anything, far from it, but I'm sure it's a difficult time for him when he watches over the last two matches, Jordan Larmour making 236 metres combined, winning man of the match on Saturday evening. And then at some stage over the last couple of days, I presume he got a phone call to say you're not included in the 45-player camp.
Yeah.
That's not to say he might have been told, rest up, take it easy, all that kind of stuff, yeah. But it's unlikely.
It probably is unlikely. And I did an interview with Rob during the summer before the World Cup, and one of his goals before he retires was to get to 100 caps. And if this is the last time, if we have seen the last of him in that Ireland jersey, he's not going to get to that mark. And I think that will be a big disappointment for him. And it's one of the reasons he signed his contract until the end of this season. And he did have quite a good World Cup, although the injury came at a bad time. And I think Larmour probably should have started that quarter-final in hindsight. He couldn't quite get to the level because he'd been hampered along the way. But if it is the end of Rob Kearney, and I'm sure we'll have lots of time to talk about him when he actually does announce his official retirement, it's some innings. And when he does come to terms with the decision and walk away with it, he won't look back in his Ireland career with many regrets. I'm sure the World Cup will be one of them, but he's been an excellent servant. But it does look like as long as Jordan Armour is fit and firing, he will be the man in the number 15 jersey. And I think Stockdale is probably putting himself in the frame for that as well, with Addison and Haley also in the mix, maybe Conway, but I think they're maybe the two. I think Stockdale showed a lot on Friday night, and maybe if you put him at the fullback, you take away some of the vulnerabilities that are there when he's on the wing. But Larmour's just outstanding at the moment, and you can't really bet against him.
Yeah, do you see it that way on Kearney, Keith? I mean, I appreciate he's probably only an injury or two away from being called back in as a very experienced performer for Andy Farrell, but it's probably a tough time when you're 34 and you get that call. Time waits for no man.
No, I think it is a tough time. I don't think we've seen the back of him just yet. But equally well, I think this is true for not every player, but for an awful lot of the players within the Irish setup. With a new coach coming in, we're all guessing. We're going to guess that there's going to be a lightening of the reins. You know, the players are going to look to and have to play slightly differently. Rob Kearney was very much Joe Schmidt's man. He trusted him all the time. He did the job that he wanted him to do. It's now up to whether the new guys that come in at 15 under Andy Farrell, what does he want of a 15? What does he want of a 9? What does he want of a 2? What does he want for all the different players in the team? Does he want to play in a different style? Is he going to look for different things? That's why this is exciting, you know. And so if we look at the natural end of a coach. In Ireland, when a national coach goes, everything else changes in the provinces as well, because these are guys that are on national contracts, or there's an element of direction given through David Nusafour as to what it actually is that they want their players to do and deliver on. When that coach is now gone, is there a different directive given? Actually, maybe we don't want to have the you know, one of the best goalkeepers we've ever had at 15, a guy who'll pluck anything from the sky. Are we looking for something entirely different? Are we looking to shake it up and use pace and guile and youth and whatever it is, else is that's required? I'm really excited by rugby at the moment, because all the players seem to be playing. It's hard to say with a different freedom without kind of sticking the knife into Joe. I don't think that that's necessary in this, but they're all playing with a different idea of how rugby is going to be played for by their provinces or by Ireland. So in the last 6 months, Munster have changed up their coaching, Leinster have changed up some of their coaching, Ireland are changing up all of their coaching. There's a difference to what's going to go on now. I hope we see a team that plays to win, doesn't throw everything out, but throws out the things that that need to be thrown out, where the game has moved on in the last 12 months. We're going to have to catch up pretty quickly. So for that, I don't think it means anybody's time is up. Mm. But maybe some of the old things that we cherished 6 months ago may not be what we will cherish in 6 months' time. Mm.
Injury notwithstanding, Jonathan Sexton is a player that Andy Farrell wants around this camp over the 22nd and 23rd of December. And he was in the news this afternoon, Rory. It seems Leon were sniffing around him in a very real way. He's rejected what I'm reading was a lucrative 2-year deal with the option of a third year to stay with Leinster. must be tempting enough in some ways if you're 34 and you're having the option of a third year as well.
Curious timing.
He's decided to stay on with Leinster 2021. Curious timing,
curious
you say.
Curious timing, yeah. I mean, a player being considered for national captaincy, demonstrating loyalty to the cause.
You're a cynical type.
He is in a race to fit for the Six Nations, I think. It's an interesting one. It's a bit of a bolt from the blue. I mean, the idea of an Irish player being bought out of his contract a year early, it's never happened before. So, but I mean, he's still class. I mean, if Leon want a number 10, and they do have probably a shortage there, if they got the sense that Johnny Sexton was an option, but I wonder where they got the impression that he might have been, because, you know, as far as we were aware, he wants to be the 2021 Lions number 10, and he wants to be Ireland captain. So I think it's an interesting one. I wonder how, you know, whether it was just a call to an agent that, you know, somehow found its way out there. I'm not sure, but it's interesting. I think there's a bit of politicking going on behind the Ireland captaincy stuff at the moment, which is interesting. And that's one thing that Andy Farrell doesn't. There's no C in brackets alongside anyone's name in this squad. That's still up for discussion. So, but look, I think it's like Leinster will be loath to lose him. I mean, it'd be stupid to let him go a year early out of his contract. He's playing very, very good rugby. And for all that Ross Byrne is excellent, the next, like Kieran Frawley, I think might have been his European debut on Saturday.
Yeah,
you've got Harry Byrne coming through. He's, you know, they're 21 and 20 still, so there's a big gap. So, I mean, they've already lost Joey Carberry. They'd be silly to let Johnny Sexton go before his time. So unless he came to them and said, look, this is what I want to do, I want to finish here, it always seemed very unrealistic.
Okay, let's turn to the weekend's action. So Saracens 15, Munster 6. Keith Wood, what's the worst thing that's ever been said to you on a pitch?
Oh, so many things.
By a doctor.
Well, that's it. Well, by every single doctor, it's time to go off, Woody. Yeah. That's the worst thing that's ever been said. But I've looked at that for three or four different times. I'll say with great comfort, the doctor shouldn't be at the side of the field talking to any of the players. No way. It doesn't matter what he said. That's not his job. It's not his role. Wind your neck in. I don't know exactly what he said. We all guessed what they said. It'll come out. There's going to be a bit of an inquiry with the Heineken Cup, and that's fine. And they should look into it. And he'll have to deal with whatever are the ramifications of it. But you actually just don't want. You don't want. There's banter and there's sledging and there's everything, and it happens all the time. Though I will say one of my favorite stories in relation to maybe weight was to Jason Leonard playing Ireland against England in the old Lansdowne Road, when he got a bit of a shoeing into the back, and his jersey was pulled up, and he had a little bit of condition on him, you know. And so the physio came on and kind of squirted water on him, and one of the wags in the crowd shouted out at the top of his voice, he said, "Leonard, you don't need a physio, you need a midwife," which is magic when you hear that, because the crowd had just gone quiet and suddenly you hear that being shouted, which is kind of fantastic. But look, I don't know, sometimes things are being taken far too seriously or over seriously, and sometimes you just want to make certain that it is the players that are on the field dealing with each other. So that's not his place.
No, Dr. Jamie Kearns, who has apologised to Jamie George and
which
Saracens
is
generally.
Exactly right, yeah, by the way.
All in person.
Yeah.
I presume what irked him, so in all of the papers today, there's a fairly good guess at what was said, and it was "you fat expletive," which rhymes with "trick." So Jamie George has certainly heard worse than this on a pitch before. I would presume, Keith, what really irks a player is when it's not a fellow pro who's out there putting his body on the line against him. It's somebody, you know, it's a cheap shot almost from outside, and somebody who has a medical standing, an important position, and it just almost
hurt him. He probably doesn't even know he's a doctor. I mean, he probably saw a fellow in a red tracksuit who said something to him. So, I mean,
it's
he
almost
just
like
reacted.
Who are you to say that to me? I'm out here, you know, we're trying to do something and it's tough work out here. And then Jack O'Donoghue gets involved and it all kind of kicks off. It's almost the fact that he wasn't a player more so than what he said, I would suspect, Keith.
I think so. I think that's what it was. The melee or the handbags or whatever it is you want to call it was all about nothing, which is one of the great things about the game at the moment. Everybody will go in and shake each other a little bit, but, you know, throwing a punch is pretty much gone now. So it's all fine.
Yeah. Whether it was coincidental, I'm not sure, but we certainly played a lot better afterwards, said Mark McCall of the incident. And 15-6 is not the end of the world for Munster, Rory, but they will still, and you were there for the Irish Independent, come away here with regrets.
Absolutely.
So what are the biggest regrets they'll walk away with?
Well, I think they had Saracens where they wanted them and they couldn't finish it out. I thought there was, before they equalised to make it 3-3, there was a scene where they were on the Saracens line having had two scrums and a line out in the 22, and Saracens all got sucked into the ruck, and Conor Murray was at the base of the ruck, and JJ Hanrahan, Chris Farrell and one other player were outside, and there was no one really in front of them. I mean, there was one defender between the four of them. And either the message didn't get into Murray didn't spot it, but he went right to a forward. They rumbled it up, and again, a similar picture presented itself to them. And it's almost like they all deferred to Murray and waited for him to spot it, rather than screaming at him, going, give us the ball. And they ended up settling for 3 points because whatever happened, they gave it to another forward and he rumbled up and it just got turned over or got held up. And that was one of those moments where, for all the talk of Larkham this season and everything, it wasn't even, they didn't need anything fancy there. They just needed to go two passes and it was probably a try. Now, Saracens are a brilliant defensive unit, but there was one of them, like, you don't often get those pictures against Saracens, and when you do, you've got to exploit them, because Johan van Graan said in the before it and after it, you've got to be almost perfect against these guys, and they were really good defensively. I thought Chris Farrell and John Klein were outstanding. They led it up really, really well. They were in their faces, and before the fight, and even in the moments after the fight, in inverted commas, Saracens looked rattled. Farrell missed a kick, and then they had that moment where they could have gone, because the penalty went against Saracens after the melee, because Owen Farrell ran in for more than 10 metres to get involved, and that was what Pascal Gauzère focused on. Gave the penalty to Munster, and Hanrahan pulls it, and it wasn't far wide, but again, that's a chance to put a bit of scoreboard pressure on. And after that, Saracens, who have a better bench and were able to bring on better players, up the tempo, and the Vunipolos were incredible in that period. Now, Munster, everything up after the row, I mean, at the time, it was afterwards when Mark McCall suggested it was something very, very grave that had been said, but at the time it was the best thing to happen to the game. It was, the atmosphere was electric, every turnover was greeted as if it was a try, and it just felt like the stakes were so, so high. And Saracens made a turnover, I think Mark Vunipola made two turnovers, Jean Klein made two turnovers, it was back and forth, it was brilliant. But Saracens just were able to go up another gear, and having missed their opportunities earlier in the game, Munster then, they finally flagged, and Keith Earls got, I think Billy Vunipola sucked in four players, including Keith Earls, who should never have got himself involved, gave it out to Maitland, Maitland scores, and then Mako goes over, and they just had more in their locker. They were able to win those collisions for 80 minutes rather than 60, whereas Munster just fell away. So I think there was, having got themselves into this position where they had to win one of these two away games at least, because they didn't beat Racing at home, and they lost four Ireland players over the course of the first 50 minutes on top of already missing Joey Carberry. There are excuses for Munster, but they actually got up to that level, which is a level that I think they can't always sustain. And they weren't, when they were at that level, when they had Saracens in trouble, they weren't able to stay there.
And as ever with this situation, Keith, in Europe, it will be tight and every point counts. And down the years, what you associate with Munster is a certain nous and a certain nose for the delicate balance of a group and a pool stage. I mean, and Saracens 15, Munster 6. So quite clearly a bonus point was missed out on Munster's part. And of the decision at the end to turn down the kick at posts, CJ Stander said, I think at that stage, we just got back momentum. We were thinking if we go here, set up a mole in the middle of the pitch. Well, we tried it and it didn't work out. That's hindsight now. We probably should have gone for three, but that's the feeling you have on the pitch. Look, we'll probably have a chat as a leadership group and the next time don't do it again. See how we feel. I mean, 7 plus 6 is still behind Saracens 15 points and they kick their three, they get the ball back. It's amazing. The last couple of years, we seem to talk about teams turning down 3 points increasingly.
All CJ's thinking there when he said after the game, that's flawed. That's flawed thinking. That had to be kicked over the bar. Are there any mitigating circumstances? I don't know. I think that's something that you'd absolutely need to kick over. It's, if you get an opportunity to get a try later on in the game, fantastic. But you need to get the bonus point first and foremost. And you go for the guaranteed one, which is the kick at goal, or as much as guaranteed as you can get. I will just touch on a couple of things Rory said, if I can. The manner of play that Munster had, I think, for 75 minutes is the best I've seen them play against a team of that calibre for two or three years. Maybe the Toulon game a couple of years ago may have come close to it, but I thought they played phenomenally well, absolutely phenomenally. They played the right way. They put Farrell under pressure constantly. You mentioned Chris Farrell and John Klein. It's the best game Klein has played for Munster. CJ Stander played incredibly well. I thought Conor Murray played very well. Suddenly the big name guys are coming up and they're doing more. The level of pressure that they're under playing against Saracens is phenomenal, truly. And for 75 minutes, I said, this is brilliant. I know they were still behind at that stage, but I thought they'd played enough and they'd get back in to get that that 1 point, which would have been an extraordinary element for Munster to get. But the truth of it is, they seem to lack a bit of critical thinking at the end. And that comes from the fact that they don't have as big a bench, that they had a lot of injuries early on, and suddenly you've props playing for 70 minutes or 60 minutes, 65 minutes when they're used to playing 45 or 50. And under that level of pressure, playing against one of the most powerful teams in Europe, they suffered for it. And I also think, and this is something we've talked about three or four times, Munster do it, Ireland used to do it. You take off your leaders. Well, if you do, you have to put a leader on the field to be able to think clearly for the last 10 minutes. For the shift that CJ Stander put in without a couple of guys beside him that he normally has, Conor Murray and Peter O'Mahony, and maybe even Joey Carberry, he put in an unbelievable shift. So that's the mitigating factor. He was shattered by the end of the game. Mm. And without a shadow of a doubt, all of Munster were. And when you put all that down, you say, yeah, are you upset? I'm still upset. Because Munster expect more of themselves and they do expect to be able to get that 1 point away from home. So in the last 10 days, Munster have given a point to Saracens last week when they really should have got away from them and not given away the penalty to get that close enough. And they should have at least got a point. So I think Munster should be 2 points better off at the moment.
Yeah.
And now they're under real, real pressure.
They sure are. So Racing away is the next port of call in January. Meanwhile, you were at the Stoop on the Friday on the Friday night. So John Cooney once again forces himself to be talked about. 19 points, two brilliant tries, made a great tackle as well on Quinn's player who was almost certain to score a try, kicked three conversions and a penalty. Harlequins 10, Ulster 34. They are top of the pool. They are 4-4. They are flying. They have Bath at home. So one way or another, you would expect them, whatever happens in Claremont, to go through, which is really an exceptional innings. And you think of Stockdale's interception against Bath in round one. I mean, sport is very, very fickle. But Cooney, I mean, this has gone from being a, this is interesting, isn't it? And he's playing very well. And God, he's putting a bit of heat on Conor Murray to now, almost inarguably, you'd have to say, the form scrum half in the country. It's just whether Andy Farrell looks at Conor Murray and says, well, you have so much credit in the bank and you're such a class operator. Of course, I'm going to go with you.
Yeah, probably the form scrum half in Europe, I would go as far as saying. I don't think there's anyone doing what John Cooney's doing right now. He is making mistakes and he admitted that himself when he was talking after the game on Friday night. He got charged down. He missed, I think he kicked a touch finder dead when he was, you know, he takes over. He took pretty much does everything for Ulster. I know Billy Burns is in the Ireland squad, but Billy Burns is very much the second fiddle to John Cooney, who runs the show, takes the kickoffs, takes the goal kicks, scores the tries, you know, makes the, like, he even forced the turnover before the length of the field try they scored, which was an exceptional move at the end of a fairly unexceptional half. And, you know, to go back to Munster very briefly, I mean, the calibre of team they're coming up against is a lot better than the calibre of team Ulster are coming up against. And
sure,
they both finished at the same stage of the Pro 14 last year, so they've just been unlucky that, you know, to end up with two, probably, you know, two of the five teams Chris Boyd talked about that they can get to that test level. So Ulster are in a nice pool and they're top of a nice pool, and they've you know, they were lucky enough that Claremont decided that that wasn't one of their, you know, that was one of the nights they were going to phone it in up in Belfast. But all you can do is beat who's in front of you, and one, the reason they're beating a lot of these teams is that John Cooney's just in exceptional form, everything's going his way. And even when he makes a mistake, he just phases it out. He was talking about reading, you know, quotes from Kobe Bryant that he's learned a lot from, about how you park the moments and you move on to the next moment. And it sounds brilliant because he's scoring tries. Is he being held up to the same standards as Conor Murray? I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I was even watching Murray on Saturday and there was great stuff, and there was also a couple of passes that dropped off when he was going right to left. It was just slowing the ball carrier down. But, you know, I'm probably not watching John Cooney's passes as closely because he's the coming man and there's a narrative and there's momentum behind him, and I think maybe we judged him in that way unfairly. But I mean, you can't argue with 19 points and two tries.
That's a very fair point. We were all looking out for the good stuff Cooney's doing, Keith, and maybe watching Murray with a more critical eye.
Yeah, well, I look, if I talk about Murray first very quickly, he played well the other day under very hard circumstances. I think he led very well. Actually, his defensive play in the back line, he seemed to be the guy targeting Billy Vinopola Jesus, all the rest of us would be trying to get out of his bloody way. But he wanted to go there up in the line, almost on the outside centre spot when there was a bit of a change. He was taking that on him as the onus. So I actually thought he played really well. But you can't deny what Cooney's doing at the moment. And yes, admittedly, it's against teams that are putting out weakened sides or not turning up like Claremont. Look, he has to be in the squad. He is in the squad. He has to be in the matchday squad as it stands at the present moment in time. And I think it goes back to my first point. It depends what Farrell is looking for. I do think having... there's a bit of a bitchiness almost to Cooney, the way he's playing. He's playing with a chip on his shoulder. I won't say devil may care. He's just doing his own thing. He is the least traditional Irish scrum half of any guy we've seen for, I would say, 10, 15 years. He's just playing incredibly well all the time. I like the bitchy bit. You want a scrum half to have an edge to him. When he's asked about it, it isn't yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. Mm. He's kind of given there's a bit of edge to him. And like that all stands well for him. And you mentioned something there. Everything's going for him. He has luck. And why would you disregard having a bit of luck? So he's going to be thereabouts. He has to be.
Keith, you make it. So it's an interesting point that, you know, we almost have, not for the first time, but it's certainly in a very long time, a kind of Le Petit General number nine there, likes doing everything, likes doing the kicks, likes being all action. And Burns alongside him, that really suits Burns as well, you think. The alchemy there is nice. So is there any, and it's a terribly negative way to frame it, but would there be any danger that like a dominant out half like Johnny Sexton might not mix as well with the Cooney? You know, you think of two football players who pick up the same spaces on a pitch kind of thing.
Well, I think we're looking at a couple of guys that could be the case, but I don't know. I think Johnny could play whatever way you want him to play. Mm. That's one of the differences. This is a guy who's old enough to think his way around whatever it is that he has to do. For me, he's injured at the moment, and I know that Joey Carberry's injured, but if Joey's back in a week's time or whatever it is, he gets a few games under it, that could be the basis of having a different ways of playing entirely. Mm. And suddenly it's a bit easier. You've got two guys who are able to make decisions. One of the things we say about Carberry all the time, and it was interesting listening to Stuart Barnes last week, because he has a very running out halves perspective. He bemoans an awful lot of the kicking tens. But it is that idea of seeing things so early, you know. And if you have a guy who's managing everything at nine, and then you have a 10 who, when he demands the ball, gets it exactly where he wants it, that could be, you know, that could be an excellent blend. We've never had it before. Yeah. Yeah. So again, it goes up to the coach. What does he want? How would he like to make something different happen?
Good to have options, I guess. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in, Rory O'Connor and Keith Wood with us. So from, again, looking ahead to looking back over the weekend, Leinster 50, Northampton 21. James Lowe, this is the scary thing. We talk about it every week. I swear this is a team in the doldrums and trying to find their way out of a bit tricky spell. We talk about it every week. We're pissed off because we haven't put in a complete performance. We genuinely go in at half time sometimes and we think we haven't even fired a bullet yet. Like, the times when we do get it right, it's going to be awesome. People come and watch us and they're stoked at the moment. But you wait. When we get it right, it's going to be something special. He says of Leinster, three tries from Ringrose, Furlong, Dave Carney in very good form, Lowe scored, Doris did as well. Frawley came on for his European debut, kicked points, and Ross Byrne 4 out of 5 and seemed to play quite well in most people's opinion. But just you wait, Rory, until Leinster start getting things right.
Yeah, I mean, I only saw bits and pieces of the game on Saturday, but every time we cover Leinster, we go down, you know, bound down to the press conference room afterwards to have a chat with Leo Cullen, and he comes out as if he's just attended a funeral for a close relative, and it's, you know, we've got it, you know, like, I know you've seen these seven tries we've scored and our players scoring hat-tricks, but, you know, it's not great, you know, so, like, there's a lot to work on here, and, you know, we're really, and in fairness, they're not up against the same calibre of opposition that they will come up against at some stage. So they have to, and they have, that's the message they have to send, because otherwise, like, what are they going to do? We're deadly, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're really, really good. They can let us talk about that. And I'm sure it's annoying fans of all the other provinces, but like, they're not really giving us any option. There's not much to pick holes in. Mm. But when they come up against the Saracens, and they'll need to, this is what drives them towards the performances they'll hopefully have at that point. And I suppose the biggest concern Leo Cullen will have now is that 19 of his players are in that Ireland squad. And, you know, 15 of them will be in the actual Six Nations squad when it's called, and there's five big games that they'll all play in, and what sort of shape will they be in when they come back? But in the meantime, there's another 15 lads who play this. Like Will Connors will come in this week, having been picked in an Ireland squad, and suddenly he's buoyed by that, and he's gone, well, I can get Josh van der Fleer's jersey. So it's impressive stuff, and they're already in the quarterfinal. They've kind of made their last two games more about chasing points and becoming top seeds, which they should now do.
Which could land them Saracens, by the way, potentially. I mean,
potentially, well, that'll be a nice reward. But I think at the Aviva Stadium, they'll back themselves against anyone. And it's a bit like that 2018 run when Saracens were at a lower ebb. But that'll be, you know, that's the kind of test that they're preparing for now. So and I don't think they'd fear anyone at the moment.
Take them at the Aviva over anywhere else.
Yeah, that would be probably a good time to get them.
Yeah, Larmer got man of the match despite Ringrose's three tries. Alan Quinlan on commentary was saying he's rubber stamped his Irish jersey. It was that kind of an evening. And just in the main, Keith, they're a joy to watch. They're taking over really nicely. Northampton didn't really pitch up like a group who had any belief they were going to spring a surprise, and there was only going to be one outcome.
There was. It's funny when coaches say things, you wonder whether they're saying them to G up their own team or to try and prepare themselves for the worst afterwards. But Boyd's comments on the previous week saying, yeah, they're like a test team. I don't really know what we're going to do to play against them. Mm. Well, what he did do is he changed 8 players. The team suddenly was a lot less. They had no push in defensive line. And Leinster were savage the other day. They just took everything that was there. They were given the freedom and the space to play, but they were running the lines for it. So it's much easier when you're running onto a ball, and they were running onto it all day. But they did an awful lot right and could have had another 30 points. And that is the frightening thing. They missed up a few. Now, they're always going to miss a few when they're having a cut at everything. Mm. I loved a bit of the pragmatism. I loved the kick to make it 17-0. I really liked that. They were ahead of the time clock. But some of the English teams in the Premiership have been, in the Heineken Cup, have been very poor.
Yeah.
They haven't really gone about it properly. They haven't dealt with it properly. I like Lowe's comments, I have to say. I don't think it's an arrogance. I think it's a realization that there are a few teams that if they're not entirely tuned in, they don't get away with those offloads. They don't get the space to make them. So you're talking Racing, Saracens, maybe even Toulouse into that, depending on their form at any particular time. Maybe not in Aviva for Toulouse, but for the others, yeah, they would need to have everything as sharp. They're not going to be given that space again. But if they are, I'll just tell you, if you don't have a hard press defence with a couple of guys back against Leinster, you're going to be torn asunder. Yeah. You can't give these guys any space.
No, it's true. I do want to move on to Connacht, but it was interesting as well. Leo Cullen was asked afterwards, how does he select? You know, you've got the Porter Furlong thing, you've got competition at 9, you've got competition everywhere. And he said, I try and judge each week who's more motivated. Of all the things he said, it wasn't minutes on the pitch, it wasn't anything else, it was just who is more motivated.
Energy.
Yeah,
it's all about training. I mean, Leinster's thing is if you're not training Monday, Tuesday, you're not going to play, and that's kind of, you know, they're not going to sweat anyone. Well, yeah, it was, and then I think as tournaments went on, it was kind of like, I think Leinster's approach previously was, if you're an international, up until 2016, it was like, if you're international, we'll give you Monday, Tuesday, and you know, you can ease your way back into the week. Now it's like, it doesn't matter whether you're a line or not, if you're not at the pitch of it for Monday, we want a full week, particularly with the Tuesdays. The one thing I did like about Boyd was, I think they realised they weren't going to finish within 7. So, right, well, we can get a bonus point by scoring 4 tries. And they nearly got there. I think that's quite a refreshing.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly for the 40-odd thousand, that, like, they're still in it, which is a weird thing after these two absolute shellackings, because Leon lost to Benetton, and Northampton can still get out as one of the kind of best runners up, which is... I think if more teams adopted that, sure, we might get hammered here, but we'll get 4 tries.
It's, no, there's a rationale.
It's not a bad one.
Yeah, Leon losing to Benetton. Could you imagine Johnny Sexton trying to cope in that environment? His head would literally explode. I do have to move on because... go on, sorry, Keith.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think Johnny is ever going to Leon, whatever other team there might be in France that might go and look at it. Johnny will only ever go somewhere where he has a chance of winning a lot of trophies because he's hungry for them, which is what you actually want from every player.
Yeah. True. Okay, so 11 points down in the 75th minute, and then Connacht managed to do this.
Gloucester suddenly starting to look a little bit tired. Tom Daly, big man. Oh, it's only they're free, and it's a chance, and Robin Coughlin's in, and Connacht have won it right at the net. Unbelievable stuff from the home side.
From out of nowhere, that Robin Coughlin threw up on the wing, and
Christmas has come early at the sports ground. Connacht, out of nothing. 2 tries in the final 5 minutes have surely won it for Andy Friend's side.
So it was kind of an interesting situation, Keith, when you compare it with what you just had to say about even Premiership clubs. So Connacht are still in a tricky spot in that pool. It was always going to be thus, and they've beaten now Montpellier at home and Gloucester at home, and it maintains a certain feel-good factor and a certain momentum. But instead of, like the English clubs are, and I understand that the demands are maybe different in the Premiership, but instead of looking at this competition as a chore and a bit of an inconvenience, it is just possible to say, well, in a standalone match like this, this will be great for 6,000 people there. This will be a memory we'll look back on at the end of the season. And a little sprinkling of European magic over the whole kind of season is a nice thing. And that should be the approach everyone's taken to the competition. And Andy Friend said, regardless of even if they're out of the thing come round six, they're still playing their best team. They're still trying to win every match.
There's a freedom to Connacht that I think Leinster have it because of the strength of their squad and the depth and the skills and capability. But Connacht are still on a climb, you know, and they were, you know, they were the cousin almost of the other three teams since the game went professional. And only the last couple of years have they really taken off under Pat Lam. But they play a style that can score against anybody, especially against a team who went daft as a brush for 5 minutes. Mm. So we were talking about, you know, you losing your mind. But they lost their mind. Munster lost their mind from having battled against the hardest thing of all time. Gloucester lost their mind with 5 minutes to go because they thought they'd won. And they sat back, they got a guy stuck into the bin, and Connacht were fantastic. It was an amazing 5 minutes of rugby. And in fact, after they scored the first one, you knew they were going to score the second one. Mm. That's one of the joys of watching them. Very few teams will play in the Premiership who will throw the ball from their touchline in a gale like Connacht will. Very, very few. This is not something that happens to these players. And we touched on it last week. It's incredibly hard to explain to teams that are manned with a lot of internationals that have played a lot of big games that playing, it used to be playing in Thomond Park, but playing in the sports ground is rare and unusual and intimidating for its madness. And sure, that's the maddest day that you're going to see in Connacht. It was fantastic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just winning a game for the sake of it sometimes is plenty. The clock is right against us, Rory. So just before we go, people might have been wondering about the Rob Howley situation. It's concluded now, an 18-month ban, half of which has been suspended. So he'll be back in June. 363 odd bets over 45 months used his WRU mobile. Bets on first try scorers for Wales?
As part of a treble, yeah, right, of games he was involved in. I mean, it's a cautionary tale to anyone involved in any sport about, I mean, how it took them 363 bets to figure out what he was at is one question you'd have to have for the bookies. But I mean, silly, you know, it's just silly stuff. You know,
there's one thing betting on a match you're not involved in, clearly, and that's also not allowed. But I mean, when you're the attack coach, who's going to score the first try?
As far as I'm aware, the managements of all these teams are kept very abreast of what they are and aren't allowed to do and aren't, you know, supposed to do. And how he thought he'd get away with it is it's ridiculous, really. And he's, you know, it's major stain on his resume. I mean, he's back. He could be back in the game in June, but it's a question then of who hires him. But I suppose it is a warning shot to any coaches or players out there that if they do fancy a bet, stay away from rugby.
Well, look, the man's entitled to repent and try and rebuild his career. So he's out of the game until June anyway. We will have to leave it there. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
And Keith Wood, once again, a happy Christmas to you, Keith.
Many happy returns. Good luck.
Go on.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.